My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
What kind of question is that? I don't know.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, we're going to keep going with the phones. Jay Gruden, who obviously knows Kyle Shanahan and the system very, very well. He had some things to say that I think are they're eye-opening. There's some truth to them. And they may not be the most comfortable thing for 49er fans to hear.
Okay.
Check this out. Listen to what Jay says about Kyle Shanahan when he's in known passing situations.
I'm just not a big fan of his true pass concepts when he's down and he knows. I'm just not a big fan of them. I don't know. I just don't understand a lot of them. And that's just something you have to continue to work on through OTAs, training camp, and all that stuff. You got to prepare to be down. It's a lot easier to call plays when you're ahead by 14 points on first and second down than when you're down. Not many coaches have had a lot of success calling plays down, having to come back. It's very difficult when you're a one-dimensional team. It's very difficult in the NFL to have success. I'm not saying that I did have a lot of success. I'm just saying, from a pass game standpoint, when I study teams, that would be one of the last teams I would look at as far as pass concepts go on known passing situations. I'd go elsewhere and look for other pass concepts.
Jay's making these comments with John Middlecoff from The Volume in the 3 and Out podcast. How does that grab you? Kyle Shanahan is essentially bad in known passing situations.
I don't think that he's wrong. And shout out 95.7 The Game alum,
yes,
John Middlecoff. It was a brief run here. It was a self-immolation sensation. For those of you who have a great history here on 95.7 The Game, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Hell yeah.
But blew up his own spot.
He's golfing now. He's fine.
He's doing great. Great guy. I don't think that he was the lesser half of that tandem at the time, but I don't want to get too bogged down with that. I don't think that Jay Gruden is wrong in what he's saying. And you look at the reason why they were, 0-31 going into last year, win behind, because I do think that this offense is built by design, 21 personnel, two running backs and a tight end, or 12 personnel with two tight ends. You don't do a lot of three wide receiver sets. You almost do no four receiver sets, which is what you want to do when you're down by a score or two scores late in the game. I don't think that this offense by personnel is built that way, and I don't think that Kyle Shanahan's scheme is built that way, where you have Brock Purdy with an empty backfield and two receivers right and two receivers left and a tight end, and you're just going to sit back there and sling it. They don't do that a lot, and they don't do that very well.
They don't, but here's what I'll buy from Jay Gruden. Like, just as a fan, and this is sort of like just a feeling in your belly, like, it's not a comfortable feeling. And I don't mean just losing, like trailing in a football game. There are a lot of games, we watch them all. And there are a lot of games when I watch certain offenses and quarterbacks, when I see them down by 5 points in the fourth quarter, like, I feel pretty good about what they're going to do. Kirk Cousins on Monday night, he came out and after one play, I'm like, oh my God, the Falcons are going to go right down the field. Like, this is a piece of cake. Now, is that on the Eagles? Whatever, I don't know. And the Niners do have some recent responses that they could give Jay Gruden here. They could say, hey, Jay, let's show you the second halves of the games against the Packers and the Lions in the playoffs last year. Let's show you what Brock did in known passing situations and how well that went. But in the grand scheme, Jay's not wrong. It doesn't look good when they're down. And when Kurt Warner told us that, that it's literally part of the plan to play with the lead, I thought to myself, well, sure, great plan. Let's score first. That's a wonderful plan. But my gosh, like, it's not going to work that way all the time. And so I do think it's a fair thing to wonder if Kyle Shanahan could make some adjustments to the way they go about those passing concepts.
I think that it would have to be a complete adjustment to the way they construct their roster and the way he goes about constructing his offense, because he likes to do a lot of pre-snap motion. We know this. He likes to do a lot of shifting, a lot of sleight of hand. If he has everybody in tow and his offense is everything that he wants it to be, it's not really geared toward the hurry up or the no huddle, because his advantage is jet sweep motion, shift this guy that way, shift the other guy the other way, all those things that we call eye candy. Well, that takes time when you're trying to play the hurry up and you're trying to go pass first down the stretch. You're down by five with 2 minutes to go. His offense is not generally built that way. And I also don't think that the personnel is built that way. Debo and Ayuk, neither one of them is a straight line field stretcher. And beyond that, Juwan Jennings is he's a 20 yard and in receiver. You don't have really a deep threat. You don't have a lot of explosive weapons 20 yards down the field in the pass game.
Jay Gruden, guess what, is going to join us in a little bit over a half hour. Jay Gruden's going to join us. He also said this to John Middlecoff with regard to Sean Payton and John Gruden's passing games when compared with Kyle Shanahan's.
The Sean Payton pass game when he was at New Orleans, that's, and my brother when he was at Oakland and obviously Tampa Bay, those were the pass games that I really liked. I really studied when John was out of football, Sean Payton and Drew Brees, and obviously Tom Brady. They were kind of different. Bill O'Brien and all those coordinators that he had there, they were a little bit different, but they still spread the field pretty good and made it a little bit easier for the quarterback, and it just made more sense to me on the eye where people were, why they were getting there, who they were reading. Sometimes I just feel like, Kyle, guys are just running all over the place with no rhyme or reason. But those are the teams. When Drew Brees was in his heyday, it was Sean, and they had, you know, they worked the backs, they worked the weak side linebackers, and they worked the crossing routes extremely well. That was one of the best offenses, I think.
I really look forward to asking him some questions here coming up again at 3:45. That's Jay Gruden, because for him to say that in the passing game, it looks like guys are just kind of running all over the place. It's disorganized, he's basically saying. That sounds very non-Shanahan-esque.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And how did it, like, couldn't you respond and be like, well, how'd Brock Purdy throw for 4,200 yards and 31 touchdown passes and finish top five in the MVP voting if the whole thing is a mess? Then again, he does have some data on his side, which is that, they're not built to come from behind. And why not? Like, why not? If you've got two $25 million receivers and you're about to have a $60 million quarterback, why can't you just drop back and have it be less gimmicky? I think it's a fair question.
And I want to hear his answer as to what he sees when they are behind. And I'm thinking about what you just said and last year, like them coming from behind. And I'm just looking at it. And against Pittsburgh, they never trailed in the opener. And against the Rams, they didn't trail in the second half. So when you want to talk about coming from behind, well, it's not being down 17-10 in the second quarter. That's being down late in the game. You crushed the Giants. You motorboated Arizona. You pounded Dallas. And then the Cleveland game is one we could look at where you did try to come from behind, and Brock Purdy got the ball back with about 3 minutes to go. And actually, I'm sorry, with a minute 40 to go after Dustin Hopkins' field goal, and he led you down the field and got you into field goal position, and your kicker, Jake Moody, missed a kick that would have given you the win. But I wonder what he sees when the Niners do go three wide receivers or four wide receivers, if their concepts are not up to snuff with the other NFL teams?
We'll talk to Jay Gruden in 35 minutes. This will be really interesting. Let's go back to the phones to Matt in Orinda. Hi, Matt. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me on, gentlemen. You're hitting a great topic today. Mark, I'm going to, I don't know why I said Mark, we're not friends. It's not like I know you, but pretty awkward. But anyway.
It's okay. Our names are out there, Matt. It's okay.
All right. Last segment, going to quote you here. You said, Brandon didn't do anything offensive against the Vikings. I agree with you. He didn't do anything offensive at all. So there's that. Look, he's paid like a dog. Be a dog. And you guys are addressing this topic like the other Coast Radio, and I love it. He's paid like a dog. Be a dog. He's got to step up and be a dog. So, Fitz, this one's for you. We all got to pay attention. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. This whole topic that you guys have stoked for all of us in this swirl that we're in is all about the Niners not quite having hit expectations yet. And you know why it's happening, and you know what it's called?
Tell me.
It's a frustration sensation, baby.
Nice. That's a buck.
Hit him with that, Grandy. Hit him. Yeah, he owes us money now. Matt, thank you.
Matt, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
Not too frustrating yet, but if they lose against L.A., which I can't imagine that they will, but they're allowed to lose, to use your lexicon.
It is. I checked. It's within the rules.
If you fall to 1-2, George Kittle didn't practice today, Debo and Christian McCaffrey won't play on Sunday, and if you go out there and lose and Brandon Ayuk is not dominant, well then, yeah, we can talk about the frustration that would fall there.
So you're being paid like a dog. You got to be a dog, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, again, you're not going to get any disagreement with me. You're simply going to say, I knew this was going to happen, and I tried to warn Brandon Ayuk, and this is because not just the money. This is not just the money. This is because of the way that he got his money, that now we have boiled down a four-year, $120 million extension. We've now boiled it down to Sunday. Sunday.
To start.
Your teammates are hurt, and so now go earn your $120 million this weekend without any context of what else is going on the field. That's the only thing I'm sort of pushing against. I it's okay to hold Brandon to a standard every single weekend, and all of his teammates for that matter. 49ers are in LA to take on the Rams Sunday, week three. 95.7 The Game's got you covered, the best coverage. Lo Neal, Evan Giddings, kickoff show at 11. Grandy, Sterling Bennett, Kyle Madsen for overtime. The second the game ends, 95.7 The Game, the home for the best pre- and post-game coverage in the Bay. More of your phone calls next. Jay Gruden in a half hour, Willard and Dibbs.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
So what was on the menu? Seven steaks? Two whole chickens?
Well, I went and got a giant Wagyu steak for him.
So I'm ecstatic about that.
On 95.7 The Game.
Jay Gruden in 25 minutes, and he hates Kyle Shanahan.
Arena football legend. Maybe hates I can him. Hit him with an arena football question at the end, because he's an AFL legend.
Right off the top. Do it up front.
What kind of question is that?
Thank you. The audience doesn't care. Sometimes I have questions for our guests that I know I'm the only one who cares about, and so I usually don't ask because I don't want to have look. Come down my road.
What would a question have been for Greg Cosell yesterday that you wanted to ask that you know no one else would have cared about?
I'm really curious about his relationship with his uncle, Howard Cosell, who was my role model in the 70s. And to call him my hero is probably too strong, but I wanted to be Howard Cosell. The reason why I'm in this business is largely because of Howard Cosell. As a 7-year-old, I wanted to be Howard Cosell. He did play-by-play for the Ali fights when I was a kid.
Why don't you do the rest of the show in his voice?
And whose voice? Whose voice do you mean? Because I end up doing Guru doing Cosell, which is, you know, kind of the bit. Because Guru always, he could go all the way. Which, yeah, Howard Cosell, he was the guy for me. So, and I don't know what Greg's relationship is with his late uncle.
See, I'd argue that people would, and you have to be, I guess, of a certain age, but I think people would find that interesting.
But I wonder if Greg has a relationship with his uncle. Man,
yeah, no, that's...
And so that, yes.
It's dicey.
Because his uncle was not controversial, but like anything in a family dynamic, like there are family members where, for example, my late mother, Sue Dibley, rest in peace, she didn't speak to her brother for the last 30 years of their life.
You have to be careful. You have to be careful. I told you the story, right? When I used to do the, and you know, the little big finish that I used to do with all my guests.
Yeah, the big finish.
Yeah, big finish is a ton of fun. I won't tell you who came on and said this to me. Former 49er.
Okay.
And one of the stupid, like, we played fun with food. And one of the stupid questions was, what was your favorite dish that mom used to make?
Uh-oh.
I thought that was a great question. I'm like, that's fun. What's your favorite dish that mom used to make? Guy goes, well, if you'd done your research, you'd know that my mom was dead.
Wow.
I'm like, dog, like, you know, he's like, I was raised by my grandparents.
Right.
I'm like, well, then do that. Like, that's the concept of the question.
Right.
You didn't need to turn this into a
totally
car crash. But, you know, yeah.
You've done your homework. You knew my mom was incarcerated when I was two.
Every time I have a guest on the show, I'm supposed to research your family dynamics. Like, that's asking quite a bit. Like, how many hours are there in the day? But anyway, it was kind of funny.
That's like me doing sideline for high school, asking the winning coach, hey, yes, you'll be back here next year? One for the thumb, right? And he goes, well, I don't need it. I only got four fingers. And he holds up his hand with a stub where his thumb should be.
Number 4.
Correct. So, yes, I should have done my homework because turns out there was an article in the Modesto Bee 4 years earlier about a woodworking accident where Coach Roger Canepa lost his thumb.
Yeah, no, I'm not putting that on you.
You better be careful.
Especially when he had another thumb.
Yeah, exactly.
The man had nine fingers, not eight.
That would have
I'm talking about Tom O'Malley.
Amazing comeback if you had looked at him and been like, dude, you don't have another hand? Where's your other hand, coach? That would have been one of the great moments in sports broadcasting history.
Instead, my TV career, gone. That was about it for your boy.
All right.
Back to traffic.
Back to the Niners.
Thank you.
Dollar Bill in the city. And again, as we get ready for this weekend, Dibs has laid the gauntlet down on Brandon Ayuk.
Someone has to.
Show me, Brandon. Be $30 million dude. Be that guy. And I'm sitting here going like, well, yeah, you're not wrong. And I understand the emotion. And so I have two responses. One, tried to warn you, Brandon. I told you weren't going to be forgiven, then this was not the way to go about doing it because people are still going to hang this over your head. But my other reaction is, I get why you're making it about this weekend, but that part's not Brandon's fault. So like the $30 million, I'd argue, is coming up in your mind because Debo is hurt and Christian is hurt and now George might be hurt. That's totally out of Brandon's hands. I don't want him to play well this weekend because his teammates are hurt. I want him to play well this weekend because there's a game. And I'll feel that way again next weekend and week 10 when all of these guys are back.
You know what's also out of his hands, Mark?
The ball.
Thank you. You know me pretty well. I probably set that up a little. I probably telegraphed that a little too strong. But I get what you're saying. And for me, it's not a week 3 or bust scenario, but I look.
It sounds like it a little bit.
It's not week 3 or bust.
Okay.
But it's a show me here in week 3 because you missed camp because you held in and you could have signed the same contract that you ended up taking a week or two earlier, which would have made you more ready or readier, which I don't think is a word. We'll go with more ready. It would have made you more ready for week 3 had you actually had camp. So fine. Week 1, you were not quite ready and you had a couple of drops, including a touchdown pass that you should have had. Week 2, you still weren't totally ready. And while this one kind of hurts because you lost to Minnesota, and now you're 1-1 going to LA, and you don't have Debo, and you don't have Christian, and George Kittle today couldn't practice with a hamstring. So George Kittle, as we sit now 3 days away from game time, he probably will be officially listed as questionable. So you might be the only legit, highly paid skill guy able to play on Sunday. So yeah, all eyes on you. Brandon Ayuk.
How well do you know me as a co-host? Of everything you just said, what do you think I'm going to respond to?
Whether or not readier is a word.
Yeah! Good job,
and
Dibs!
I don't think it's a word.
No, I think it is. It is.
How about readiest?
No. Oxford English Dictionary, readier. In fact, the first known use of the word readier was back in the 1920s, and specifically in 1922 in the Daily Mail.
Okay.
That's the first time readier was used.
Yeah, I still will default to more ready. Readier seems to me...
I couldn't be any more ready. I couldn't be readier. Yeah.
More ready. More ready feels better to me. The greater point is that you had your two preseason games, which unfortunately were regular season games.
Oh, you're not wrong.
And
sure.
And you were great.
No, dude, like, yes, perform well. Perform well, but I am completely ready and happy as a damn clam, and I don't even know that clams are that happy, but like happy as a clam, Niners win 27-17, Brandon has 3 catches for 42 yards and no scores. Fine. Did the offense perform well? Did you move the ball? Good. He doesn't need to be the dog. He just needs to play his position. I don't know how the Rams are going to defend this. If that leads to other people being open, sweet. Sweet.
It's bigger than that. If you win the game 9-8 and he has 4 drops, he has 2 catches
That's a different conversation.
Well, what are we talking about here? We're talking about Brandon Ayuk.
I understand, but that doesn't need to be this weekend. Like, I would come after Brandon any week that he did that.
Right, but this is the first week that I'm looking at him squarely and saying, all right, 30 mil, now's your time. Because we need you now more than we needed you in weeks 1 or week 2.
See, I'd kind of argue... It's already been time to come down the road. And I didn't want to get into this for multiple reasons. A, we exhausted ourselves and the entire world with the name Brandon Ayuk.
For 5 months, yeah. Well,
at least for two.
Yep.
We exhausted everybody with it. Secondarily, the 49ers had a phenomenal night last Monday. And Brandon did not play well. I don't care what your metric is. He did not play well.
And we talked about it aftermath.
Right, but the Niners had a wonderful night, and it was so there was no reason to like harp on that fact. And then come the next game where Brandon was maybe a touch bit better, but the larger issue was the 49ers were not. And quite frankly, not really in any position group. A couple individuals were fine, but no position group like nailed it in the game in Minnesota. So Brandon was not the focus. But I would argue that if you really do want to make things about Brandon, he has already had an horrific start to the season. Horrific. And quite frankly, I'm not really sure why it hasn't bothered people more. This guy held the hell out, got no extra dollars for it, came to camp, smiled at the media and went, yeah, I was kind of a pain in the butt toward the end. Then walked out on the field, dropped a ball in the end zone that was the dime of the year from Brock Purdy, has 6 catches in 2 weeks, and the Niners are frustratingly 1-1. And we're like, okay, now play. No, dude! Where you been?
No, now play.
No, you should have been playing.
Fine, but if you want to look at the first two games and you want to talk about the biggest issues with the team, Brandon Ayuk is probably fourth or fifth on the list of issues with the 49ers,
well,
I would say.
I guess.
I would look at an offensive line, the right side, that has been porous. I would look at a defensive secondary that's been confused at times. And then if you want to get down to Brandon Ayuk and his ineffectiveness, yeah, we could talk about that.
I don't disagree with that, but I'm looking at it more through the lens of, I'm not like, okay, what level of an issue is he with the 49ers? I'm just telling you, the same thing I told you last month. I was turned off by it then, I'm turned off by it now. You left your teammates high and dry, you took everybody on a goose chase, it got nowhere, you got your money, then you laughed about it, and here we are not performing. Like, that's not good. I'm okay. I'm not going to, like, it's okay. This is recoverable. And again, for me, this is about the next 5 years. But there's no way to look at what Brandon has done to this point. It's not excusable. Like, it's recoverable.
Of course.
But this is always going to be something that happened. And I will always and forever, no matter where this goes from here, I will always look at the way he handled this offseason as very poor.
I agree with all of that, but I'm not looking at 5 years. I'm looking at week three. And this is where, for me, you want to talk about recoverable. The recovery has to start this weekend.
It would help, I'll agree.
Because you don't have Debo. You may not have George. I'd say George right now is probably 50-50 to play.
Feels like it best.
Well, he sat out today with a hamstring. And
because it's a hamstring, that's sort of like, right? Like, why would you push this suddenly 3 days from now?
Agreed, but you might push it because you don't have a lot of other skill position guys, but then again, you might not push it because you feel like the Rams are depleted too, and you feel like maybe, you know, if you rest George, he could be ready for the Patriots game or, you know, a bigger game down the road. You've got Seattle and Arizona coming up and the rest of it, but I look at this game and Brandon Ayuk, and I think, okay, you want this to be recoverable, then go out and have 8 catches for $122 and a touchdown in a victory. That's how you start the recovery.
It would certainly help. It would certainly help.
You don't start the recovery with a 2-catch game against the Jets, including 2 drops, and then a 4-catch ho-hum game against Minnesota where, let's be fair, he was not very impactful in that game.
No.
He had a catch in the open. I think the first play from scrimmage was a throw to Ayuk. And then it was the first or second play from scrimmage.
Okay.
He had a catch.
Okay.
And then he had 3 other catches, and you'd be hard-pressed to remember those catches.
Oh, you're talking about the Minnesota game.
Correct.
I thought you were talking about the Jets game.
No, the Minnesota game, he either had the first catch or the second catch.
I think you're right.
I know they threw it 3 times and then punted.
Yeah, it was a 2-yard catch, I think the second play from scrimmage.
Thank you, Randy.
One more target later on, and then his second catch came like halfway through the third quarter.
Boof.
Very unimpactful.
Yeah, yeah. But I know you're not saying otherwise. Like the Niners win and Brandon doesn't pop statistically is way better to me than the Niners lose and Brandon goes for a $120.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I know you agree with that. But Dollar Bill in the city next up here on Willard and Dibs. Again, Jake Gruden's going to join us in 15 minutes. Hi, Dollar Bill. What's up?
Hey, boys. Hey, you know, one of the things I love about listening to you guys is, you know, you guys can argue, and it's the opposite of when I argue with my wife, where the only two outcomes are, you know, she's right or I'm wrong. When I listen to you guys, you guys can both be right at the same time. Where, yeah, I, as a fan, you want to, who cares? You win, it's the greatest antiseptic. But when you get a, you know, as both of you guys just said, if you get the big bag and the way you went about it was kind of a little diva-ish, and then, you know, the first couple weeks of the year, you're not really performing, well, then the pressures are going to build and build and build. And every week that he does not perform, the echoes are going to get louder and louder and louder. And this is the week where you want to be a baller, you got to ball out because you're it.
Dollar Bill, thanks so much.
Thanks,
Dollar. I mean, like in the end, and everybody knows this isn't going to be some super smart comment or whatever, but like it's just like what we saw with the Jets. The guy dropped a touchdown pass in his first game after taking everybody on an absolute annoying ride.
Right.
And nobody cared because the Niners won.
Exactly. Like that was like a three on the scale of 1 to 10 in terms of outrage because they were dominant, they won, and it was just kind of like, ooh, that was a thing. And we talked about on Tuesday, like, what were the negatives of the game? And you had to really think long and hard about the negatives. It's like, ooh, yeah, Brandon Ayuk with two drops, including a dime in the end zone. That sucked. But anyway, nice win.
Exactly. You
know, that was it.
This is all going to get baked into whether or not the 49ers win. And he can take his damn sweet time as long as the Niners are winning. He really can. It just won't bother people that much. If that much. Yeah. Like, because that's what this is about. And I, like, the second he signs, I'm making the effort, at least, not to do the $30 million thing.
I mean, because you said at the time, look, like, you're out on Brandon Ayuk.
This was prior to the signing.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, you also said at the time, when he signs and he's a Niner, you're going to cheer for him all the same because you're a 49er fan.
Right, and I'm going to move on, and I have. And although I'm explaining to you right now, I think pretty clear, like, I still think that that was really poorly done. He's here. Great. I hope he performs really well. It's off to the start that it's off to, but whatever. Like, and that's the way I'm going to move forward. He's here now for a pretty long time, and I want the 49ers to win football games while he's here. I am not going to lose sleep over whether or not he gets 1,300 yards or 1,100 yards, or even if, oh dear, there's a 900-yard season. I just don't. When the Niners score, I don't care who got in. I just don't care. But if the Niners are struggling, and this is where, again, I really do get where you're coming from, you want it to be Brandon this week because it looks like it should be. But I will be totally fine if Brandon Ayuk goes out there, draws a lot of eyeballs, and Juwan Jennings goes off. And his numbers stink, and the Niners win by 10. Sweet.
Well,
that's cool.
Everything is different based on the result and how it looks. And you can have a team, you can go out there and beat the Rams 5-3, and the offense is terrible across the board, and you win 5-3, and Ayuk has one catch for 9 yards and two fumbles. We're going to think differently. Even though the Niners win, we're going to still come back on Monday, and we're going to look at things differently. So, or they lose to the Rams 28-24, and Ayuk has 13 catches for $170. They lose, and that's going to suck, but we'll look at Brandon Ayuk, and we'll go, you know what? B.A. balled out. They needed him to, and he's going to get his flower. So it's not as clear-cut to me as win or lose will color our opinions.
Any football game, win or lose, is going to lead to potentially new concerns. The Jets game didn't because they looked dominant in many, many phases. If they lose the game 28-24, I got all kinds of concerns about the defensive side of the football with a new regime.
Could be special teams. You never know.
I got, and if they win 5-3, I got all kinds of concerns about what's going to happen next. So all of that is fair. I'm just not pinning it on Brandon to go be some like sparkly numbers fantasy performer this weekend.
I'm not either. Yeah, it's not about sparkly fantasy numbers.
You said be the dog.
Be the dog. Go out there and be the dog. Get open, catch the ball, and earn your money. $30 million a year, and I know that doesn't kick in until next year, and ultimately it's a team game, I get that, and if they win, all opinions will be colored based on the result from the team in general, but for me, this is a game where you don't have Debo or McCaffrey, and George Kittle, even if he plays, will most likely be somewhat hampered. This is a game where offensively, I would look to Brandon Ayuk as a guy who I should be able to rely on for a big game to help us win the football game.
Let's go to Bobby in Los Altos next up. Hey, Bobby. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I think I called in a couple days ago talking about that 0-30 stat that Dibs brought up a little while ago. So I'm very interested to hear this Gruden conversation.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not confident about their way to come back. But what I want to say is I really agree with you, Willard, in terms of this of what our expectations are of Brandon Ayuk. And I know this is wordsmithing and Dibs. I know you just said not impactful a lot, but actually the way I look at it is I don't need Brandon Ayuk to be productive, means, you know, in terms of stuffing the stat sheet, but I do need him to be impactful. If that means creating, drawing more attention in the secondary so that Juwan Jennings has a monster game, as long as he has an imprint on the win, if he can change the defense, I really don't care if he doesn't get one catch. Oh, side note, some clown beat me on the draft. They spent 75% of their fab on Juwan Jennings, so I lost him. But I expect...
That's too much!
It's crazy.
That's too much, Bobby. You did the right thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Juwan Jennings, I think, is going to have a great game. Unfortunately, I have Christian McCaffrey and I have George Kittle, so maybe I'll draft George Tongas or whoever the tight end three is to get me some points this week. But my point is that Brandon Ayuk, again, does not have to stuff the stat sheet. He made $30 million. I don't think he gives a crap what fans say about how he's going to perform week three. He's created financial security for himself. He gets $2 million a game. I really don't think it matters if he is 10 for 150. But if he can allow the defense to be shifted so the tension is for him, so that tight end three and Juwan Jennings and Juszczyk or whoever it is can help win the game. That's all I need.
I'm totally with you, Bobby. Bobby, thank you very much for the call. He referenced the Jay Gruden conversation, and it is coming right around the corner, largely because we find stuff like this really interesting. John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast on the volume. Here's an example of something Jay Gruden said about Kyle Shanahan's system with regard to throwing the ball, known passing situations.
I'm just not a big fan of his true pass concepts when he's down, and he knows. I'm just not a big fan of him. I don't know. I just don't understand a lot of them, and that's just something you have to continue to work on through OTAs, training camp, and all that stuff. You got to prepare to be down. You know, it's a lot easier to call plays when you're ahead by 14 points on first and second down than when you're down. Not many coaches have had a lot of success calling plays down, having to come back. It's very difficult when you're a one-dimensional team. It's very difficult in the NFL to have success. I'm not saying that I did have a lot of success. I'm just saying from a pass game standpoint, when I study teams, that would be one of the last teams I would look at as far as pass concepts go on known passing situations. I'd go elsewhere and look for other pass concepts.
I'm a Shanahan fan, but I think this is fair. This is a conversation that's worthwhile with regard to Kyle Shanahan throwing the ball when everybody knows that he's going to throw it. Top teams in the NFL have been able to do that.
And I want to ask Jay, and I will ask him coming up, about what he means by pass concepts, if it's the personnel grouping, if it's the routes that he has his guys running. What is it about the Shanahan offense that he doesn't think works when they're down by a couple of scores?
Longtime coach in the NFL, knows the game, knows the Shanahan family, and said what he just said, and joins us next. Jay Gruden coming up on Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
And we are presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. David Lombardi is going to join us in a half hour. We'll dive deeper onto the Niners, including the injuries that just popped up today. It's been a bad week for surprise injuries.
No doubt.
Kyle Shanahan came out of the game in Minnesota and said no injuries. Somehow, 5 days later, Debo, George Kittle, and Charvarius Ward are all sitting out practice, and we know Debo's gone for at least a couple weeks.
Man.
Whoops.
Yep.
And now Kyle Shanahan's got to deal with this, which is some words from Jay Gruden, former head coach in Washington, former offensive coordinator in a couple of places, that I think are really discussion worthy. Let's dive into them. River Island's guest line, Jay Gruden, joins us on Willard and Dibs. Hey, Jay, what's going on?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing fine. We're intrigued by what you had to say, especially as a long time.
It wasn't a knock on Kyle now. Well, it's not. It was.
No one's calling it a knock, but I think that what you're saying here is very interesting to 49er fans who are very aware of the struggles of coming from behind in the fourth quarter. What do you see from the Niner passing game when they are down, when they are in known passing situations?
Well, I'll tell you what, they're not down very often, so they don't have to worry about it very often. You know, a lot of these teams right now that are in the lead, they call whatever they want, the bootlegs and the runs. Everything's working. But when people get down, and when everybody gets down in the NFL, it's very difficult to come back. It's not just Kyle. Every coach has a problem coming behind. We work together at Tampa, and I've known Kyle's offense for a long time, and I just, in my mind, I don't recognize some of the things that he does in known passing situations. They're different, and it's not to say that they're bad. They're just different to me and what I'm used to, that's all.
And I want to delve deeper, because I don't think you're wrong, Jay, and I don't want you to feel threatened by this conversation, because it's something that I've talked a lot about. And for me, it comes down to formation and personnel and maybe route concepts as well. When you look at this team, a team that doesn't do three wides very often, they almost never go four wide receivers. Is it personnel as much as it is scheme as to why they don't come back very often?
I think it's more route concepts. The route concepts, I don't recognize a whole lot. And by me saying I don't recognize them doesn't mean they have a grasp of what they're trying to do. It's just different than what I'm used to. And the Andy Reid and the Sean Payton back when he had Drew Brees. And, I'm old school. I just don't recognize some of the way they're attacking defenses and all that stuff. But personnel-wise, I mean, you have to keep Kittle in the game. He's the best tight end in the business, in my opinion, as far as all-around tight end. And Debo and Ayuk's in the game. And I don't know if they have a third or fourth receiver or not. But, they haven't had an opportunity to really have to come back a whole lot. When they have had that opportunity to try to come back, they're not very successful. That's all.
Jay Gruden joining us here, Willard and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Coach, I know this is going to sound like a silly question, but for football fans who are listening, we understand what a route is. But when you say I don't recognize the route concepts, what specifically do you mean? What are you seeing?
Well, I'm an old man. And I'm an old school guy. I'm just talking about, a lot of concepts. You attack cover two, you attack cover one, you attack cover three different ways. If you get cover two, we're going this side. If you get cover three, you're going this side. If you get man-to-man, here's your man element and all that stuff. To me, it's just a lot of people running around in similar areas, and I just don't understand some of that. That's all. I mean, it's not that they don't have a rhyme or reason for what they're doing. I'm sure they do. It's just, to me, they're running in the same location a lot. If you freeze the film at the end of the play, you have three red jerseys in similar spots. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But I just don't feel like they work the field, all the blades of grass, the right way, personally. You know, you high-low the corner, you high-low the hook player, you high-low the weak side hook player, whatever you want to do. You work man-to-man against this technique. You know, it's just different to me, that's all.
Is it a byproduct of being a run-first coordinator, a run-first coach, and a guy who maybe focuses more on pre-snap movement and formations and shifting?
I think that's part of it. I think a lot of people have gotten into this jet sweep motions and crazy motions instead of more so, getting people lined up and using personnel to have the defense show their hands. So, you know, if it's man or zone or cover three or cover two, but a lot of these motions can mess up the defense, but they can mess up quarterbacks as well, because you don't know exactly how they're going to react to some of these motions. So I'm not saying I was a static guy, but I was more of a formation teller. So if I have tight end split out wide and the safety goes with my notes, man to man, stuff like that. But they have a rhyme or reason. They've been very successful offensively there. Nobody's arguing that. I'm just saying on the past known passing situations and come from behind situations, they haven't been as effective for whatever reason. And the concepts that I know that we learned back in the Tampa days, they're just different. And I'm sure he and Mr. Shanahan, they've come up with ways to try to attack defenses in different ways. I just don't recognize them very well.
Coach, you also sort of indicated that you think Brock Purdy doesn't get the credit he deserves for the way the offense works. I wonder if you could expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think the offense, anytime you have an offense that is successful as San Fran's been, your quarterback has to play at a high level. The footwork, the timing, the anticipation, the accuracy has to be in tandem. And for it to be successful, that quarterback has to play, like I said, and be consistent. A lot of quarterbacks, they can throw a five-step glance route. They can throw a play action, but do it on a consistent level and put your team ahead of the sticks all the time. I think Brock makes good decisions more often than not, and that keeps his team with the ability not to have to play from behind, not to play on third down and long. And that's part of why Kyle's so successful, because his offense is predicated on first, second down. You look at New Orleans Saints right now and Clint Kubiak, their offense. Derek Carr has had maybe two third and tens, and the rest of them in third and twos, and they're second and five, they're first and ten, and they are crushing people right now. And that's kind of the similar formula that San Fran and Miami is using. But when they do get third and long, they struggle like everybody else, not just them, but like everybody else. But Brock is an efficient quarterback. He's accurate and very good player.
When you look at the upcoming game against the Rams, and McCaffrey's out, Debo's out, George Kittle missed practice today with a hamstring, he'll be questionable. How does Kyle Shanahan go about getting Brandon Ayuk open and scheming a system where the defense will be paying him a lot of attention, but how do you make it so you can get Brandon Ayuk involved in this pass game?
I'd be more concerned about George Kittle than anybody. I think George Kittle makes that offense what it is. He is the best blocking tight end and receiving tight end combination there is. And if you look around the league, not many teams have a blocking tight end like George Kittle that can go out and run pass routes and break tackles like he does. They're almost non-existent right now. I think he's the most valuable player on the team. Personally, I love Trent. I love Brock. I love Debo. But George Kittle is a monster. If he's not in there, I don't know what they're going to do. So you got to figure out ways to get another tight end in there and continue to hit people with Mason in the running game so your play actions are there on first and second down, and on third down, do the best you can and protect the quarterback and try to get through this game and try to win it probably by a field goal or whatever. But, yeah, it's tough when you lose players. You know, I'm sitting here on a park bench right now talking to you guys because I lost my starting tight end, my starting two quarterbacks, my starting left tackle, my starting left guard, and three linebackers. So when you get injuries, man, it's hard to function, and they're going to have to make do.
All right, so let's dive into that. You have a Rams team that's got no Puka Nacua and no Cooper Kupp. You got a Niners team that's got no Christian McCaffrey, no Debo Samuel, and now, as you're detailing, maybe no George Kittle. Which team is like a lesser version of itself?
Probably the Rams, just because they have offensive line injuries as well, and they have a very young defense. At least the 49ers have a very good defense, and I think when you have some injuries on offense, your defense has to carry the load, and they have to understand that. And Kyle, I'm sure, will understand that, and he'll take less risk on 3rd and 10. If 3rd and 10, maybe they'll run a screen pass to Mason or whatever and punt and back up the Rams and make them go the long field against the very good defense by the 49ers. So sometimes it's okay to win 17-13. We don't have to look at our rushing yards at 130 and our passing yards at 330. You know, the stats don't matter. We just got to get out of this game with a win. Punt when you have to punt. Don't turn the ball over and make them go the long field, and I think they'll be fine.
Jay Gruden here on 95.7 The Game. I don't know if you heard the comments from this morning, but Mel Kiper Jr. came out and said the too high safety look is something that maybe should be banned because the vertical passing game has gone the way of the dodo bird. As few as an offensive mind is going up against a lot of too high safety. How do you beat that in the pass game, Coach?
It's been beaten for many, many years, and that's one of the most ignorant statements I've ever heard. Actually, I liked going against too high defense because I knew that I wasn't going to get blitzed, so we could protect our quarterback, and we could work the middle of the field. We could work the outside lane and cover two, and then the whole shot. You could work the weak side check down if the weak side hook player gets too deep. You can draw up clinic tapes on how to beat cover two. Cover two is not the issue. The issue is protecting the quarterback with the 4, 5, 6-man rushes. Maybe we should outlaw blitzes and just rush 3 guys all the time so the quarterback can stand back there all day. But I also said that you could play cover two with your corners. So your safety can come down and be the middle field reader, and your free safety can be the weak side flat player. I mean, you can dress up your cover. It doesn't have to be the safety. So there's teams are playing different versions of cover two now without the safety, so it'd be impossible to police. It makes no sense at all. I'm telling you, most offensive coordinators that I know would rather go after cover two than actually after cover three fire zones and all these blitzes.
Love the answer. That was great.
Great answer.
Yeah, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union for a low-rate auto loan. Apply online or just ask for First NorCal Financing at the dealer. We're talking with Jay Gruden here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. Coach, I want to like scratch into your sort of like offensive game plan mind here. If you were in a situation like the 49ers where there's a clear-cut sort of number one option that's still out there in Brandon Ayuk and a bunch of the other top options are not available to you, as an offensive coordinator, are you going into a game like that thinking, all right, we got to almost force the ball to our guy? Or are you decoying him some and still trying to spread things around?
I wouldn't say decoy. I think every play concept has a number one, number two, number three, number four progression. I'm trying to get Brandon to be our number one progression. So if you're running a shallow cross, I want him to run a shallow cross. Now, there's other progressions that are going to be part of the play. If they take away that, then you can go to other progressions. That's fine. But I always want him to be my number one progression. Obviously, if we get the man-to-man, I want to make sure I alert Brock Purdy that if we get man-to-man, we're throwing to Ayuk on this play. That's the best way to do it, because coverages dictate where the ball goes, but within each play concept, you have your progressions, number one, two, and three. I just try to get Brandon the number one spot. Certain play actions, you want him to be the one to get it, and then if he's covered, you go back to another guy or check it down to your back. So there are ways to get him the ball, but there's no guarantee. But coverages will dictate where the ball goes. But in man-to-man, we're going to tell Brock, hey, we're going to alert Brandon on this one.
You talked about the pass concepts from Kyle Shanahan, but what about the run concepts, and what does it say about the Shanahan run scheme that Jordan Mason becomes another undrafted guy who appears to be very effective in the Shanahan run scheme?
The best. No, and I said this, first, second down, Kyle's the best probably ever coach. And part of that is he's had some pretty good tight ends. And I think George Kittle, I made this mention a couple weeks ago, George Kittle, if you want to run the ball effectively in the NFL, you have to have a tight end. And if I was taking a tight end, George would be my number one guy. The way he blocks for the outside zones, the backside cutoffs, all the things, he is absolutely clinic perfect in the way he does everything. He's the best. And then you had Trent Williams, you had some good backs and a great run scheme. Chris Foerster, I don't think, gets any credit for some reason. He was my line coach for a year in Washington, and I almost cried when we let him go. But yeah, he's awesome with his run scheme, and Kyle does a great job. Mike Shanahan, they're great with the outside zones, the inside zones. They come up with unique ways to cut off the backside. They're the best in the business of what they do in that regard.
Jay, before you go, we got listeners here in the Bay who might have had to pull over because this is a fun and admittedly dumb sports radio thing that we do all the time with the Niners, which is sort of like, of all the stars, who's the most important? Who do you not want to get hurt? And so the answers from Brock Purdy to Christian McCaffrey to Trent Williams come out a lot. Did you say it was George Kittle?
Well, Trent's very obviously your quarterback. I don't know who their backup is right now, but you never want your quarterback to get hurt because all the information goes through him, and he's got to handle the run game, snap count, everything goes through the quarterback. So quarterback's always one. After that, I coach Trent. Trent's the greatest left tackle of all time. I don't give a damn what anybody says. However, if you want to run the ball effectively, you have to have George Kittle in your lineup. He is amazing to watch. He's fun to watch, and in the past game, he's good. He may not be the best tight end in the passing game in the NFL right now, but as far as a combination blocking, receiving tight end, George Kittle is the man. So it's a tough call for me. I'd go quarterback. I wouldn't want my quarterback ever to get hurt. Trent probably be 1A and Kittle be 1B. Debo might be 1C. They have some great players on that football team. But George Kittle, I think you want to run the ball first, second down, you got to have a tight end, and George would be my pick.
There it is. Hey, Jay, great stuff. Thank you so much for hopping on with us.
All right, thank you guys for having me.
Okay, Jay Gruden, right here on Willard and Dibbs.
Yeah, I like it. And
my dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.